Here we go.
We are on Daf Chav Dalet Amid Beis in Sanhedrin, about a dozen lines from the bottom at the Gemara, and we're going to try to explain what is wrong with someone who plays with dice that he is disqualified. The Mishnah just said he's disqualified, and Rabbi Yehuda said a qualifying statement, a Masai, when he has no other livelihood. If he has another livelihood, then he's not disqualified. And okay, we were frozen. Okay. Gemara asks, Mesachek Bekubia, a dice player, my Ka'avid, what has he done so bad that he should be disqualified? We're going to have two reasons. Amar Rami Bar Choma. Rami Bar Choma says, Mishum Dahava Asmachta. Because when you make a wager, dice is wagering. This is called in halachic parlance, here's a new word to learn for today, an asmachta. Literally it means a reliance. We have to see what that means, and the next line will tell us. And we have a rule, the asmachta lo kanya. An asmachta is a non-binding agreement. There's no kinyan made with an asmachta. So let's take a look at the large footnote. Asmachta literally means, as I said, reliance, is the term used in the Talmud for an agreement based on speculation. In general, an asmachta involves one party or both consenting to surrender to the other a certain sum of money depending on the performance or outcome of a particular event. In other words, if this and this happens, then I'll give you this and this. All right? Now the question is that a firm enough commitment that we call that a kinyan? A normal kinyan is, here, I want to sell you my iPad. So what do? Sneer picks up the iPad, and that's it. That's the acquisition. All right, that's a formal acquisition. Or you give cash, sometimes acquisition, writing a document. But if I say, well, if this happens, then I'll give it to you. So that is, you know, we call it reliance. It's conditional. In each case, the individual, so we're saying, again, consenting to surrender a certain sum of money, depending on the performance or outcome of a particular event. In each case, the individual obligating himself enters into the agreement, relying that the outcome will be favorable and that he will not have to pay. Okay, since a transfer of ownership requires that the object's owner give it willingly, an asmachta agreement is non-binding because the obligated party never sincerely meant to obligate himself. All right, that's the point. So let's take a look at gambling. Okay, when you're putting money on the table, why are you putting money on the table? Because you're hoping to win. And you don't want the other guy to get your money. Especially we're talking about it's one-on-one. It's not like this big, it's not like the lottery you mentioned yesterday. Rambam Chanukah considers gambling an example of a smachta. Why? Because each player consents to the terms of the game only because he expects to win. Since the loser does not willingly surrender the wagered amount, the winner is considered to be stealing when he collects and is thus ineligible as a witness or a judge. All right? The guy's saying, I'm putting the money in. I'm putting it in on the condition that I win. Right? Now that I didn't win, but the rules are, even if you lose, you got to let us have it. Well, now there's no kinyan. There is no real kinyan made. And since there's no kinyan made, it's like you are a ganef. That is, this is Rami Bar Choma. Okay? So comes along Rav Sheshes, he disputes this. Maybe Asmachta isn't a kinyan, but this may be a little bit different. Rav Sheshes says, Koki Aigavna, anything like this particular case of gambling, Lav Asmachtahi. This is not an Asmachta. Let's see the reason why. Whoa. a true case of asmachta, let's have the classic case of asmachta, involves a situation which the man obligating himself has reason to believe that he will not actually have to pay. That's part of the thing. It's not that, well, no, it's a good likelihood it's going to happen, so when the likelihood happens, I'll pay. No, the whole idea of saying asmachta doesn't work, the guy himself is assuming it ain't going to happen. You know? Okay, you know, I'll give you $100 if the Leafs win the Stanley Cup. Okay? Now, that's a real asmachta, because you're not planning on that. That's a real asmachta, because that ain't going to happen. You're saying it meaning that I ain't paying you.
So you can't take his money?
That's what it's not a Kenyan. For example, one who contracts to work his neighbor's field and stipulates that if he does not live up to his agreement, he will pay a fine. This is the worker. He never really expects to pay because he feels confident he can do it as promised. The worker says, hey, here's the job. You pay me this. And if I don't get it done on time, you know, you could fine me $1,000. Take $1,000 off the price or whatever. Now, the guy really thinks he's going to do it. He's not planning on not doing it. He doesn't want to lose $1,000, so he doesn't really have intent to lose that money. Another example, Reuven, a debtor, pays 50 zuz of the 100 that he owes his creditor, Shimon. To assure Shimon that he will repay the 50 zuz in a timely fashion, Reuven gives the note of indebtedness, the original note, to a third party, Levi, and states that if he, Reuven, does not pay the balance, the 50, by such a date, Levi should return the note to Shimon, the notes on the entire amount, thus enabling to collect the entire 100 zuz. You follow what's going on over here? The guy owes him 100. There's a credit note written on it. The guy pays him 50. He says, okay, you know, I'm going to pay the next 50 in the next month, and just to show you that I'm going to do it, I'm giving the entire credit note to a third party. If I don't pay on time, give it to the other guy, and then I'll lose an extra 50. Now, he ain't planning on not paying. Reuven does not really expect to have to pay the additional penalty because he believes that he will be able to meet his obligation on time. Since both these cases are asmachta agreements, if the contractor is unable to work the field or the debtor is prevented from paying on time, he's not subject to the agreed-upon penalty. In other words, he doesn't really mean it. Now, there are some conditions that we assume you do mean, all right? But these are ones, you're just saying it so the guy will give you the job. Okay, and I'm a good, you know, you can hire these guys out, these contractors, right? Fix my roof. Sure, no problem, I'll have it done, but I need it done in 2 weeks. No problem, I'll have it done in 2 weeks. And if I don't have it done in 2 weeks, the job's free, right? Yeah. He don't mean it. He don't mean it. He's just trying to get your work. That's it. So he doesn't mean that. Now, there are other types of conditions where we can't assume he didn't mean that to happen. That's why you always have to analyze, well, do you think he means it or not? Surely the guy doesn't want to work and not get paid for it. So why is he saying? He's only saying it to get you to do business with him. That's all. Levy's only giving you the credit, the whole credit note, to just get off my back. But I don't really want to pay extra money for that. So that's when a real asmachta, we assume the guy does not plan on giving the extra money. A wager, though, does not cause an asmachta. Why? Here's the point. For each player realizes that as skilled as he may be at the game, the outcome is nevertheless governed by chance. So you know this is a chance. It's not like if I'm the worker and I plan on getting it done on time. I don't not plan it. And if I knew I wouldn't get it done on time, I wouldn't make such an agreement. When you're doing a gambling, you know, the one thing for sure you know, is you can't guarantee you're going to win. And you know most likely you're going to lose, right? So then, of course, you can't say, well, I never would have done if I'd have known I would have lost. What do you mean? You're not in control of the situation. Paying back the debt, you're in control. Finishing the job, you're in control. But winning a gambling wager, you're not in control of that. Okay, therefore, he's resigned to pay if he loses, and the winner is thus not guilty of stealing. That's the point. So Rabbi Baruch Hama holds, it's an asmachta. He doesn't mean it. So he doesn't mean it. If you collect the money, you're a ganef. While the other rabbis say, Rav Shesha says, no, this is not an asmachta. He knows he's not in control of the situation, and therefore you can assume he's okay to lose it. So therefore, why can't he be a witness and a judge? What's so bad? There's no thievery going on here. Ella, the answer is, Lafisha ain isukin bi yeshuva shalom. Gamblers are not engaged in the general welfare of the world. They don't do something that's a productive thing for the world. Well, let's continue. My Beinayu. So what's the difference between these two answers if they're both not allowed? Ika Beinayu. The difference will be the Gamar Umnasa Achriti is where the gambler has learned another profession. So if he has another profession, hopefully that's a helpful profession to the world, an honest living, then okay, he's involved in helping the general welfare of the world, and he's not a ganef because of the gambling, so he's okay. The other rabbi says, no, even if he has a good job, he holds gambling as thievery. And that becomes different if you have this job or not. So now the Gemara will try. These are the rabbis explaining the first line of the Mishnah. Now Gemara is going to ask a question on one of the rabbis from the last statement of the Mishnah. The last statement of the Mishnah said, Utnan, or rather a proof. We're going to bring a proof to Rav Sheshes' view right now, where he says the problem is not involving Shuvah Shalom. Amar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, Amosai, when do we say, when would that previous statement at the beginning of the Mishnah saying dice players are ineligible, when do we say that? Bizman She'ein Lahem Umnas Elohu, when they have no other trade but gambling. If they only gamble, then that's not good. Avol Yeshlam Umna Shalo, who? But if you have other jobs that besides gambling, Harezek Sherim. So they're okay. So what do you see? Alma, time at a masnisin. So what's the reason of the first opinion as well? Mishum Yeshuva Shalolam. It has to do with you're ineligible because you're not involved in the general welfare of the world. If that's the case, now we've come full circle. Kashul Rami Bar Chama. So now we have refuted Rami Bar Chama on that point. In other words, we had the opening statement of the Tanna Kamma. Gamblers are ineligible. Why are they ineligible? Rami Bar Chama says because they're thieves. Rav Shea says nothing doing. It's not involved in general welfare of the world. So now we seem to have a proof. Why? Because the opening statement of the Tanna Kamma was qualified by Rav Yehuda. We would have said, Amosai, when do we say the gambler is disqualified? When he what has no other job. But if he has a job, then he's okay. So we see it's like Rav Sheshes. It's a kasha and Roy Bar Chama. At the end of the day, when we're finished learning the Mishnah, why are gamblers ineligible? Because they're not involved in the welfare of the world. That's it. So Rabbi Merchama says, no, because they're Ganavims. We see Mishnah not like that. Now, what might be your possible answer to that question? Before we go ahead, what could be a possible answer to that question? Within the information you have. Possible answer could be, well, how do you know Rabbi Yehuda's statement is a qualifying statement? Maybe it's a disputing statement. In other words, we started off with, who is invalid? Tanna Kamma says, a dice player. Then we go, blah, 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 blah. Amar Rabbi Yehuda comes up, Rabbi Yehuda, Amosai, when is the dice player ineligible? When he doesn't have any profession. Mm-hmm. Now, when the person who's trying to bring a proof to Rav Sheshes saying, well, Rabbi Yehuda is just qualifying the statement of Tanna Kamma. But maybe he's not qualified. Maybe he's arguing. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's saying, well, you say dice players are always not allowed. I don't say they're all. When are they not allowed? Only if they don't have a job. Maybe it's a machlokes, and Rabbi Bar Chama is understanding that Tanna Kamma holds it has to do with thievery, and indeed Rabbi Yehuda argues. Maybe it's a machlokes, and that would be a good way out, because now you've said there's a machlokes in the mission. Mm-hmm. Gemara is saying you might want to say that, but you can't. So Gemara is like kind of saying, I know what you have in mind, you want to say it's a machlokes. And if you're going to want to say it, you're not going to be able to say it. That's the war is going to come with that. All right? So back. Kashya l'Rami Bar Chama. So we have a question on Rami Bar Chama. And if you're going to want to answer, V'chi tema pligi rabbona l'Rabbi Yehuda, do you want to say the rabbi's arguing Yehuda? So therefore it's a machlokes. That means the rabbis will hold the reason they're ineligible is because of thievery. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees that says, no, only if they're not involved in maintaining the world. So maybe that's why Rabbi Merchama is explaining the Chacham like that. No, because we have a golden rule of thumb. V'omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi has taught us a rule how to learn Mishnayos. Kol makom. Every time you look throughout the Mishnayos, when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi put the Mishnayos together, and he writes the following, She'omar Rabbi Yehuda, when Rabbi Yehuda says something, and he prefaces it with either one of these two words. Next page, Klaf Hey Amad Aleph. With the word Amosai, when do we say it? Or with the word Ubameh, which also means, and when do we say that? What was the word he said in this Mishnah here?
Amosai.
Whenever he says that, he's not coming to argue. It's a golden rule. Eino Elop, he's only coming but to do what? Lefaresh divrei chachamim. He's coming to explain the words of the chachamim. So he's coming to explain the words of the Chachamim. He's not coming to argue on the words of Chachamim. It seems that everybody in the Mishnah holds. The only problem with a gambler is he's not involved in the welfare of the world, and it has nothing to do with thievery, and that would seem to knock Reinbar Chama off. So that's Rabbi Shua ben Levi gave us his golden rule when Rehuda says it, and also when Rabbi Yochanan, and also it says, it's a general statement, for Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Amosai. But when Rabbi Yochanan says Amosai, Lefaresh, that's coming to explain when he says the word Amosai, but when he says Ubameh, it's Lachlok, it's coming to argue. Mm-hmm. Now, Yeshua ben Levi says, I want you to know, whenever Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan give qualifiers, this is how you have to understand it. Rabbi Yehuda, when he says the word Amosai or Bameh, it's always coming to explain. But Rabbi Yochanan, well, it depends. When he says Amosai, he's coming to explain. But when he says Bameh, he's coming to argue. All right, so that's, so now, but Udekuli Alma, however, but everybody agrees, Amosai Lefarishu, doesn't matter Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Yehuda, Amosai comes to explain. So no matter, and here it's Rabbi Yehuda, doesn't matter who will be explaining it. Explaining means you're coming to explain, you're not coming to argue. So it is a question on Rami Bar Chama. How could Rami Bar Chama say the reason why a dice player is eligible because of thievery when both rabbis in the Mishnah are saying it's not because of thievery, it's because he's not involved in the welfare of the world? Now the Gemara is going to have a nice simple answer. Okay, so let's try to remember who is who over here. Rami Bar Chama is a Tana or an Amora?
Amora.
An Amora. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeshua ben Levi, a Tana or an Amora?
Amora.
An Amora. Okay. So now, if that's the case, so now we say, Gavra Agavra Karamis. Do you challenge one man, Rami Bar Chama, from the statement of another man, Yeshua ben Levi? In other words, What do you want to say? So you Rishon Levi, you came up with this rule. Whenever Rabbi Yehuda says Amosai, he doesn't argue. He's qualifying. He agrees. Well, guess what? Maybe Rami Bar Chama disagrees with that statement, and he can because one's an Amora, there's an Amora. Mm-hmm. Obviously, by the fact that Rami Bar Chama explained the rabbis. Now think about this. Rami Bar Chama, he explained the first position. What's wrong with the dice player? He's a ganef. Now he obviously, you think Rami Bar Chama didn't know the next few lines of the Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda's coming, he says, well, that's only if he's not involved in the welfare of the world. So obviously, if he gave a different reason, he disagrees with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's principle that whenever it says Amosai, it's coming to explain, but he's saying it comes to argue as well. And therefore, Mar Savar, one master, meaning Rami Bar Chama, he will hold Pligi, that the clause may Amosai means they disagree. He's going to say whenever it says Amosai, even if Yehuda says Amosai, he's coming to disagree. Umar Savar, Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi, on the other hand, says, lo Pligi, they're not coming to argue. Consequently, Rami Bar Chama is not incorrect in regarding a wager as an asmachta, because in doing so, he follows his understanding of the sages. Do you understand what's going on over here? So it comes out So far in learning this Mishnah, when the Chachamim say a dice player is ineligible, we still maintain there's two different reasons to understand the Chachamim. Rami Bar Chama says, the Chachamim say so because it's an asmachta, and asmachta is not a kinyan, and therefore the guy's a guy. That's the Chachamim's opinion. Although, Rav Sheshe, who's that? Rav Sheshe says, no, they hold only because he's not involved in general welfare for the world. Then we're saying, wait a minute, what's Rabbi Yehuda doing at the end of the Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda says a qualifying statement. So according to Rabbi Sheshes, he holds it's indeed a qualifying statement, and both Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim say the only problem with the dice player is not involved in engaging the world. Because why he says it, whenever Yehuda says a Messiah, it's qualifying, not arguing. Rabbi Rachama will disagree. Rabbi Rachama is going to say a Messiah means he's still arguing. It's not qualifying, it's arguing. So what are they arguing about? If we clearly, everyone knows one thing, Rabbi Yehuda is clear. The only problem is he's not involved with general welfare of the world. What about the Chachamim? Comes Rabbi Meir Chama saying Rabbi Yehuda is not qualifying. He's arguing, and therefore what's the reason for the rabbis? Can't because he's not engaged in welfare of the world. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Therefore you got to say it's what? He's a ganav because a smachta is not a kinyan. Okay?
So what's the difference between someone who's not involved in the welfare of the world for this someone else who's not involved in the welfare of the world because it's a recession and you just can't find a job right?
Well, no, a recession is one thing. When you make your livelihood on gambling, that means you have no intention of doing anything. You have no intention of helping the world. Okay? And that's the difference over there. You're unemployed, you're looking for work. You're looking for work. It's not your fault. He says, I decide my life's occupational life is winning money, making money by gambling. And I'm not involved in helping the world at all. That's my philosophy in life. That's a professional gambler. So, and by the way, we paskin like that. So therefore, your wife's off the hook.
In other words,
so we paskin that it's not thievery, and only a professional gambler. So okay, then you gotta know what a guy owns a casino. It's not so. What a guy owns a casino?
It's definitely not helping society.
Well,
the professional gambler denies 10% of his winnings every time.
Well, but 90% is not good. 90% he's taking people
charity and stuff you steal.
In other words, if I'm a shoemaker, okay, so I'm a shoemaker, people give me money, I give them shoes. Now if I wasn't around, people wouldn't have shoes. If Tony wasn't around, they wouldn't have their books accounted for, and Revenue Canada would throw them in jail. Right? That's another that, right? Right. If Earl E. wasn't around, people couldn't defend themselves in court. You're giving them a legitimate, product.
Service,
right? If Tony wasn't selling vegetables, people would be hungry in the morning. I'm just saying. So you know, without you three guys, people would have problems. But what if a gambler would not be alive? Gambler didn't live. What would we be missing? Wasting money? Imagine if there was no gambling in the world, Earl. How much richer you'd be. Your wife would just buy dresses. I understand.
No need for bankruptcy.
They buy something else. I'm just saying, but the guy's not involved in help. How's the world helped?
So what about someone who owns the Blue Jays, let's say? He's not helping the world.
He's just sure he is.
He's entertainment.
So entertainment... there's nothing wrong with entertainment. It's better that goyim are entertained with the Blue Jays than thinking of killing us.
And,
you know, now that they have that, they don't have to throw us to the lions.
Well, baseball's not a game of chance, anyhow.
No, Tony is saying a different thing. What's the value of entertainment? You could say it makes them happy. Let's say you go to a wedding. You pay a band. Oh, you're supposed to make a chassan kala happy. You pay a batchan, a guy to make jokes. It's also to make him happy. There's a lot of depressed people in the world, and entertainment, you know, keeps them from killing each other. You know, that's, you know, so you could say Okay, maybe in a real religious world, very Haredi world, it wouldn't be of any value, but at least the non-Jewish world places a value on it, and it's quote-unquote an honest, I'm providing a service. The service is called entertainment. But gambling, what are you providing? You're taking the guy's money. Unless you say, no, it's also entertainment. You know? It keeps them, that was our discussion with Earl. I say, what's the difference if you spend $100 and it takes you 3 hours to blow through the money at the slots, yeah, as opposed to, and you watch a play and pay $100 for 3 hours. At the end of the day, you walk out with nothing either way. So, anyway, so that's this. Okay, anyway, let's just finish this up. Which is a little bit, another four lines to go, we'll hit the two dots. All right, so it comes out. There's a machlokas. Do they argue? Is there a machlokas? So Gemara now says Vatanya, but it was taught in a Braisa. So that's our machlokas. Now, a Braisa now, we're going up to a Mishnaic level, right? The Braisa says, Bein sheyesh lo umnis, regardless if the gambler has another shalohu, whether he has no other trade but this, Bein sheyesh lo umnis elohu, regardless if he has another job besides this job, or regardless he has no other job, haray ze posel. Aha. So wait a minute. So what does that mean then? It's a brisa now. That means, so then why is he not good? With a job or without a job, he can't be. So what's the reason? Must be why.
He's stealing.
So clearly, the rabbis have to hold that opinion. Because who else would that be? Right? Look at the footnotes. Whose opinion is that? Reb Meir, the Chachamim, or Reb Yehuda?
Chachamim.
So presumably the opinion of the Braisa corresponds with the sages in our Mishnah. Moreover, the Sefta, from which this Braisa is an excerpt, clearly attributes this opinion to the sages and states that they dispute Reb Yehuda. This seems to prove that although Reb Yehuda introduces his opinion with the expression when, he means to dispute, not explain the sages. Which Yehuda set a rule. Whenever Yehuda says, hey, Messiah's coming to explain. Heis is explaining when there's another Braisa. That's already Mishnah Braisa, right? It says, in the name of the Chachamim. Job or no job. He ain't acceptable. So clearly they hold it's because he's a Ganef. So guess Rav Shuv ben Levi is wrong to say that it comes to explain when clearly we see from another source that that's not the opinion of Meir. The Chachamim hold, it's because of Ganef. So, not quite out of the woods yet. Hahi, we're going to say that Braisa is not the pure Chachamim, but this is Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Reb Tarfanhu. There's another opinion out there. It's Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Tarfon, because now we have a third Braisa. Tanya, because we learned in another Braisa the following. Now we get a little bit of background over here. It's a totally different case. Take a look. A man said, I'm here by another. Here's the story. There are two guys sitting around and just schmoozing. A guy's walking from a distance, and they say, you know, do you think this guy's a nuzzer or not? Yeah, he's got long hair. Oh, they got nothing to talk about. So, well, I think he's a nozer. I don't think he's a nozer. Not lush and hard. It's just a waste of time. Right? So look what happens. So, well, you know what? We'll make a bet on it. So he says, I am hereby a nozer if the man approaching is a nozer. Now, they don't know. The other guy says, I'm hereby a nozer if he's not a nozer. Well, good. He's going to come. It would seem that the man proven correct would become a nazir. Wouldn't you think so? Well, I say, if he's a nazir, I'm a nazir. I guess if he's not a nazir, I'm a nazir. Right? The first person believes that the passerby is a nazir. To emphasize this point, he declares that he accepts upon himself a vow of naziris, if indeed he's correct. The second man is convinced that the person is not a nazir. Not really, let me be honest. Do you think that these guys want to be nazirs? They don't. They're just trying to. They don't have money to put bet. You see, bet you. I don't have no money. Five well, let's six. Bet differently. I'll bet I'll have to suffer being a nuzzer for a month. Okay, now that's the introduction. Now, what does the Braisa say? Ditanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Tarfon. It's a Mishnah now. A Braisa. Rabbi Yehuda says the name Rabbi Tarfon. La'olam ein echad mihem nazir. Neither one's a nazir. Why? Lefi shalo nas the nazirus ela lehafla. For nazirus only begins when you clearly utter it. You say, I, Yossi, of sound mind and sound body, for all philosophical and spiritual reasons, have fought good and hard, and I wish to be a nazir.
He said,
that's an example. Example. I don't want to be a nazir. I'm just giving an example. When the guy says, well, if he's a nazir, I'm a nazir. If he's not a nazir, I'm a nazir. They're not clearly uttering that they want that. So now what does that mean? Would you say this is an asmachta? Was this an asmachta or not?
Yeah. Sounds like it. Yeah.
Rabbi Tarbin holds that a declaration made dependent on a factor. Now, was it within their control or without their control? What the result would be?
Without.
Not in their control. Beyond the control constitutes an asmachta. Accordingly, Yehoshua ben Levi and Ryochanan could argue that the first price, which considers a wager and asmachta, follows Rabbi Tarfon. Remember, there was no name attributed to the Tanakam of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah starts with a no-name Tanakama. Okay, no name we could ascribe to Chachomim, but you don't have to. There's another brisa that says the Chachomim say, regardless of the job or not, out. That is the Chachomim. So now we thought, well, if the Chachomim said over there, here the Tanakama must be the Chachomim, and that's what they hold. And now Rav Sheshes, you're up to Greek. He said, no, just because you have a Chacham in another Brisa, and there's a Tanakam here, but look, I've got a Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Tarfon, who says by Nazir, you're not a Nazir because a Smachta doesn't work. If a Smachta doesn't work, what does that make a gambler, a thief, and therefore becomes a Tanakama is who? Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Tarfon, and is not the Chachamim. Whoa, so you understand what's going on over here. We've got now a number of people on the Mishnaic level, and we got a few rabbis on the Amorah level, and it's all overlapping. You follow? So the Tanakhama of our Mishnah says, it's a machlokas, what did the Tanakhama mean? According to Rav Sheshes, he's saying, well, just like Rav Shua ben Levi says, whenever Rav Yehuda says, Amos, I have something to explain, he's explaining the Tanakama, and they're both holding that it only because the guy doesn't help the welfare of the country. It has nothing to do with stealing. That's how he learns it consistently, and then you've got another, but then there's a Brisa somewhere else. And I even have a Chachamim, another Brisa, who agrees with that. Yeah, but there's also a rabbi in another mishnah about Nazir says, no, it's because Asmachta doesn't have a kinyan. Well, but we're not going like him in this mishnah. On the other hand, Rami Bar Chama will say, no. The Tanakhama says the problem is because you're a thief. And I disagree that Rabbi Yehuda is coming to qualify his statement. And now I have another brisa that says exactly what Chama say because he's a thief. So that's how he's going to learn it. So, you could say because he's a thief, could say it's not. It's inconclusive. And therefore, we don't know what the Tanakama, who the Tanakama is. Mm-hmm. The Tanakama could be a Chachamim that acquiesced and that Rabbi Yehuda is explaining, or it could be not a Chachamim, and it could be a Rabbi Yehuda Amar Mishum Rabbi Tarfon. That's who the Tanakama is, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda will be coming to disagree. So that's the idea. Be that as it may, we hold final Psak Halacha. Is that the problem with a gambler? He's not involved with the furthering of the wealth of the world. And therefore, Lamaisa, if you go to gamble now and then, you can still be a judge, you can still be a witness. Up to the two dots, perfect place to stop.